This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to the Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour, a co-production of WNYC Studios and the New Yorker.
Welcome to the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. Kurt Weill was a co-founder of the rock band The War on Drugs. But he left the band shortly after its debut to make records all on his own. And they're sometimes characterized as slacker rock. His recent EP is called Speed, Sound, Lonely KV.
She's deliciously tall, sort of a long girl. She's delightfully small, sort of a song girl. She freely admits to...
Kurt Weill, that's V-I-L-E, it's his real name, has also appeared on the comedy show Portlandia and on HBO's animated series Animals, where he played a singing squirrel. Weill came to the New Yorker Festival in 2018 to talk with our critic Amanda Petrusich.
You were a clue on Jeopardy last year. This is one of my favorite Kurt Weill facts.
Well, it's college Jeopardy.
Well, it's kind of a weird clue. The clue was the Violators assist this pretty pimpin' rocker in his foul work.
Yeah. He's the Riddler. Like, how nobody could even understand. Even if they knew the answer, they'd be like, wait, what?
It was a complicated
clue. Going on there.
Nonetheless, I would imagine being a Jeopardy clue has to be some sort of milestone. That's got to be super weird. Who was the first person who told you?
You don't know her.
You grew up one of 10 children. Can you tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up in your family?
Yeah, it was pretty annoying. No, it was pretty cool, but it was like no space, you know, for, like, the boys' room had 5 boys in it. Because of that, I can, like, sleep through anything, and I can just tune in and out whenever, you know, whenever people are talking, I can, like, be listening or not.
And now you yourself have got 2 young daughters. How would you characterize yourself as a parent?
Father of the year. No, it's awesome having kids, and they're still pretty young, and they're really into music and reading, and yeah, they're total brats in the best way.
Do they like your songs?
Yeah, like the one, my oldest, Awilda, she's like listens intensely to words, and the youngest, Delphine, she'll go straight to a piano or guitar and just start playing. So,
when did you start writing songs?
Well, I started playing a string instrument, like a banjo, when I was 14. I probably started writing songs right around then, but I made my first like cassette when I was 17. I would put out a tape or a CDR, but I would call it my album as if it was like really, really, you know. But they didn't really become real albums until I was 28. But
Did you make your own cover art
for
the
totally.
CDRs?
Yeah.
I used to do that for mixed CDs. So the banjo was your first instrument, and that's kind of what you learned to write on?
Yeah, my dad wished I was like a bluegrass musician. So, like, a year before, maybe when I was 13, he hung it over my head later. He's like, we were going to get you a guitar for Christmas, but you were really bad this year. So the next year, he's like, I could get you this banjo. And I wasn't sure, but then he worked for SEPTA, like drove trains, and a conductor, he basically was going to buy the banjo off this conductor, and the conductor played it over the phone, you know, the telephone, not the cellophone. And it sounded really cool through the telephone. So I was like, all right. But I kind of just treated it like a guitar. I just strum it. But yeah.
Who are some of your favorite songwriters?
So many. Let's see. You know, there's like the classics, of course, like Bob Dylan and Neil Young, and then there's like Townes Van Zandt.
Well, you had the chance to open for Neil Young last year.
John Prine. Yes, I opened for Neil Young recently. It was pretty funny. I was terrified. There was like 80,000 people. And,
wow.
And I just kind of like what I'm doing now, but with the guitar in my hand. It's like, I came out real cocky. I was like joke singing like some kind of Stevie Nicks thing. And then I was like, I got the crystal vision. And then I was like...
Did you get a chance to meet Neil?
I met him multiple times, but only for a split second. And the best time was a couple times before I got backstage. It was the first time I saw him with Promise of the Real. And these kids, Willie Nelson's sons and other kids, they back him up really good. And I weaseled my way backstage with my wife, Suzanne, and she egged me on to like say hi. And so I did. And I was like, oh, Neil, I've seen you like 10 times, and it's always amazing, but this was the best by far, Down by the River, which was like 30 minutes long. I was like, it's like you were underground in outer space at the same time. It was unbelievable. And he was like, he was smiling all nice, and then when I said that, he was like, oh, yeah, we can go in outer space whenever we want. and then I got a picture with him. That was cool. Every time I see him, it's where he just played a show. And even if we have friends in common, it doesn't matter because you're just like, ah, I'm still a fanboy. But this last time, his bandmates, I'm hugging all of them. They, like, in between, they're all passing around a jazz cigarette. I'm usually scared to do this. I used to love it as a kid, and then I can't. It's harder to deal with it, but I'm trying. But but anyway, I grabbed it from the drummer, and me and my wife tried it out for the first time ever. No, just kidding. But then, anyway, they came off the stage and we're feeling really weird and everybody's sort of just around him. And then he's just about to get away as he usually does. And then I was like, well, I should just give him the Sadie CD, which is my friend's that we have. He knows who the Sadies are, and usually I'm just, it just makes more sense than being like, hi, I'm Kurt Vile again. So I was like, I'll just give him this Sadie CD. So I literally jumped down and I was like, hey, Neil, you get the new Sadies? And then everybody was like, ah! And they all, and like his manager, Elliot Roberts, he's a legend, but he's old now. And he was like about to check me like a hockey player. But then I got it to him though.
There is a dryness and a kind of absurdist humor to a lot of your lyrics that I just find so sort of intoxicating and beguiling. Some of it recalls, I mean, you mentioned Dylan, you mentioned John Prine, I think two lyricists and writers who do this really well. A line like, girl, you gave me rabies, and I don't mean maybe.
Yeah, well.
I mean, how do you sort of think about lyrics in relation to rhythm or in relation to melody, and kind of where does the lyric writing fall within your songwriting process?
Well, and I don't mean maybe. I plagiarize from like Bo Diddley or other people, you know, they always say that, or other bloops people they say, and I don't mean maybe. And then,
they don't
and, then,
it with
and then the girl you gave me rabies, that's a true story. So.
How did you get rabies, Kurt?
From a girl.
I'm not buying this.
Well.
Is this like rabies the new monarch?
No, I'm lying.
The kissing
I'm
disease?
Lying.
I figured.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. More to come.
Hi, I'm Roz Chast from the New Yorker. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by NetSuite. Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on delivering your product or service, the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified platform. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/New Yorker. netsuite.com/New Yorker.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Why don't we hear some music?
Okay. All right.
Up this morning, didn't recognize the man in the mirror. Then I laughed and I said, "Oh, silly me, that's just me." Then I proceeded to brush some stranger's teeth, but they were my teeth, and I was weightless, quivering like some leaf coming the window of a restroom. I couldn't tell you what the hell it was supposed to mean, cause it was a Monday, not Tuesday, not Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Then Saturday came around and I said, "Who that stupid clown blocking my bathroom sink?" All he ever wanted was to be someone in life that was just like all I wanted, to just have fun, live my life like a son of a gun. I could be 1,000 miles away, but mean what I said. Then I woke up this morning, didn't recognize the man in the mirror. Then I laughed and I said, "Silly me, that's just me." Then I proceeded to knock home some stranger's head, never was my style. But I couldn't tell you what the hell it was supposed to mean, cause it was a Monday, not Tuesday, not Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Then Saturday came around and I said, "Who that stupid clown blocking my bathroom sink?" But he was sporting all my clothes, the guy say pretty pimping. Yeah. All he ever wanted was to be a man, but he was always a little too cute to be a man, and the mom was lost. He was always 1,000 miles away while standing in front of your face. Then he woke up this morning, didn't recognize the boy in the mirror, laughed and said, Silly me, that's just me. Then I proceeded to brush some stranger's teeth, but they were my teeth, and I was weightless, quivering like some leaf come in the window of a rest. I couldn't tell you what the hell it was supposed to mean, cause it was a Monday, not Tuesday, not Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Then Saturday came around and I said, who that stupid clown blocking my bathroom sink? But he was sporting all my clothes that got say pretty pimping. Baba Uma Man Man.
Thanks. You guys are beautiful.
Kurt Vile from a live performance in 2018 at the New Yorker Festival. His new album is called Speed, Sound, Lonely KV. And he talked with Amanda Petrusich. You can read her on Music All the Time at NewYorker.com. I'm David Remnick, and I want to thank you for joining us as always. And if you want to keep in touch, find us on Twitter at New Yorker. Be well.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker. Our theme music was composed and performed by Merrill Garbus of Tune Yards, with additional music by Alexis Quadrado. This episode was produced by Alex Barron, Emily Botine, Ave Carrillo, Rhiannon Corby, Kalalia, David Krasnow, Gofen Mputubwele, Louis Mitchell, Michelle Moses, and Stephen Valentino, with help from Allison McAdam, Morgan Flannery, Mengfei Chen, and Emily Mann.
With additional help from Joe Plord.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported in part by the Chirina Endowment Fund.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.